The skeleton inside the jelly tried to roll away, but the cooked flesh began to crumble. The lights inside the darkening mass took on a frantic pace and then winked out. Sagging to the floor, the cyborg lay quiescent. Not trusting the thing, Ryan kept the flames on the bubbling mass until there was nothing left but the charred and slightly melted frame of its skeleton. Releasing the hot handle, Ryan tossed it aside and sagged against a Hummer. The fragging handle on the hose wasn't designed for that kind of punishment, and had conducted the heat right back to him. His hands felt as though they'd been cooked to the bone. It hurt to move them even a little bit. The water sprinklers in the ceiling cut loose with white foam to quell the blaze. Not water this time, but fire-retardant foam that would smother a grease fire. Rushing through the bubbling downpour, Mildred and JB went to check Ryan, while the others hurried directly into the supply closet. Seconds later, they emerged with sledgehammers and proceeded to loudly ensure that the bastard skeleton would never function again. As the blaze died away, the ceiling slowed its outpouring of white foam until it stopped completely.
How bad?
Mildred rummaged through her med kit.
You'll be fine. I know that it hurts, but there's no permanent damage, and I have an ointment that'll fix you up in a few days.
Opening the tube, she got busy.
Don't have days. The Matt Trans is dead. There's a cage in front of the Deeper, and a guardian at the exit.
Yeah, I know. Somebody does not want us to leave this redoubt alive.
Which is why we have to get out immediately.
How can we? The minute we open the blast door, the other half of this thing is going to attack.
You think it's that smart?
Quite right. A Cerberus cloud is, so we would be fools to attribute any less intelligence to this.
Jack tilted his head at the fuel pumps.
Maybe try again? I'll do next.
Rising slowly, Mildred went to the pump and wiped the faceplate of a gauge clean, then wrapped it with a knuckle.
Plenty of juice left.
No need. I have a better idea.
The sun was just rising over the horizon, casting a clean pearlescent light across the world, highlighting the deadly orange clouds of chems and toxins that crackled with thunder. A dry wind drove twirling dust devils across the ground, the miniature tornadoes spinning madly and then vanishing when they reached the strip of hard-packed dirt that formed the local highway. Sitting on their silent two-wheelers, the Rogan brothers rolled along the road, handkerchiefs tied over their lower faces to hold out the ever-present dust that always carried the taste of some ancient foulness. The big men in their bikes were streaked with dirt, the halogen headlights resembling a line of full moons moving through a cloudy night. The Rogans passed a lizard sleeping on a rock without disturbing its slumber as the four Coldhearts moved toward the little desert ville ahead. The landscape around the ville was rippled, as if molten stone had cooled suddenly in the act of expanding. That was a common enough vista in the zone, the telltale aftermath of a sky-dark firestorm hit by rain. Nukescaping, the Renklys called it, although nobody but them really knew why anymore. Reaching a deep ravine, the Rogans reduced their speed and rolled single file across the ramshackle bridge. The bridge was almost choked solid with tumbleweeds caught in corroded supports, and they had to maneuver through the obstructions carefully to avoid going into any of the holes in the pre-dark construction. At the middle of the span, the brothers pulled weapons just a heartbeat before an old man dressed in rags rose from behind a tumbleweed barricade. His dirty hair was a wild corona of filth, and a rag was bound around the shriveled face, a wide scar bisecting his features straight across the middle. The disfigured oldster was armed with a long metal pole that had a broken bottle lashed to the tip. The jagged glass gleamed in the growing morning light.
Hold it right there, Outlanders! If you want to cross my bridge...
Just then, he spotted the brothers. The spear shook in his wizened hands.
What in the nukin? It's you!
Never slowing the advance of their black bikes, the Rogans opened fire with their new blasters. The stuttering rapid fires tore the old man apart.
Nice to be remembered.
Edward glanced over the rusty side to watch the tumbling body disappear into the thick river mists below. The runoff water from the nearby mountains had always made the bridge slightly cooler than the rest of the desert, and thus a favorite spot for folks to sit and wait for pilgrims. John circled the hidden campsite of the deceased hermit.
Frag that shit and reload. We're gonna need every brass ready when we hit the veil.
Can't disagree with that.
Robert said nothing as the tires of his motorcycle rolled over the dropped spear. It had been nice seeing crazy Winston again, even if it was only for a split second. Childhood friends became enemies as adults. Such was life. The triple-stoop bastard should have known better than to aim a weapon at them. The last time they had removed only his nose. This time, they took everything. Robert shook his head. Some people just never learned. Leaving the dilapidated bridge behind, the Rogans crossed long miles of empty countryside, carefully veering past an old rad pit that didn't glow anymore, but was still deadly, and completely avoiding a low hillock bearing the graves of their parents. Let the dead bury the past. They were concentrating on the future. With the coming of the dawn, birds were winging low across the sky, afraid to rise too high and risk being killed by the toxic clouds. At the brittle cry of a screamwing, the Rogans moved their hands closer to their long blasters. Screamwings were triple fast, but could be killed if a person stayed alert. Cresting a low swell in the dusty ground, the brothers saw their halogen headlights wash across the tan wall surrounding a deserted ville. The pitiful barrier was made of adobe bricks, sun-dried blocks of mud. Each brick was about the size of a shoebox, and the wall reached nearly 6 feet in height, its top layer sparkling from all of the broken glass embedded into the material. The front gate was a thick wooden door, just wide enough for a person on horseback to ride through. The barrier was formidable, but swung aside at the moment, the opening flanked by crackling torches set into the adobe wall, inviting all to come inside.
Gamster.
John slowed his bike. The other brothers followed suit as they slowly rode through the gap in the defensive wall. There was a rocking chair for a guard, but nobody was in sight.
Trusting souls. The idiots are still offering a friendly hand to everybody who passes by. What a bunch of thieves.
Dempster was pretty much as he remembered, little more than a double row of shacks surrounded by a mud wall. The last time the brothers had been here, the wall was only 4 feet tall, so the civvies were making progress, just not a hell of a lot of it. For some unfathomable reason, muties avoided Dempster completely, and not even stingwings would fly overhead. This made the place a natural sanctuary, and soon every biker gang and Coldheart knew about Dempster. Fighting wasn't allowed inside the ville, and whenever one gang got ambitious and decided to take over the ville, everybody else combined against the usurpers. Dempster was neutral territory. Anybody inside the mud brick walls was safe from attack or revenge for old crimes. Until today, Edward thought. Squinting hard, Alan caught sight of a newly built guard tower rising from the center of the ville. But it was clear that there was nobody there. Robert eased the new combo rapid-fire across his lap.
Nukin' idiots. This is gonna be fun.
Shut up. Just keep your eyes peeled for the watering hole. That's our goal here.
His brother's hard gazes swept the assortment of adobe buildings, looking for familiar faces. Then Edward jerked his chin to the left.
There it is.
Gazing through the growing sunlight, John saw the tavern and felt a brief twinge of homesickness. Located in the heart of the ville, the brick building rose 3 full stories and had a slate roof that defied the acid rains, plus a brass front door marred by countless ricochets until the dents resembled a deliberate pattern hammered into the metal for decoration. Iron bars covered the windows, making the tavern resemble a fortress or a baron's home, but it was just a gaudy house. Neutral territory, deep inside neutral territory.
Psh. Home sweet home.
As the Rogans rolled closer, the brothers could see that armed Sekhmen were walking on the flat roof. Faint traces of tobacco, wolf weed, stale sweat, and warm beer could be smelled in the air. They flinched as a breeze carried the strong reek of urine from the public lab set off to the side. A couple of tired-looking horses were tied to a hitching rail in front of the brick building, and a wag of some kind stood nearby. It almost looked like a pre-dark car, except that the chassis had been removed and patched canvas was stretched tight over the body of the machine. For better mileage, John realized. Less weight meant you could go faster. That canvas shit might keep off the acid rain, but that was about it for protection.
Shit. Only a fool trades armor for speed.
Bringing their bikes to a smooth halt directly in front of the door, the brothers got off and each flipped a switch, setting the alarms and anti-personnel devices. The small onboard computers were in perfect working condition, and the bikes could protect themselves with deadly efficiency. Or so Delphi had said. Pulling the combo blasters from their holsters, the Rogans rested the weapons on their shoulders and started past the horses. The nervous animals moved out of the way of the brothers. Lowering the barrels of their black powder long blasters, the Sekhmen on the roof watched but did nothing as the four big Outlanders calmly walked onto the porch and out of sight beneath the overhang. Sitting on the porch in a folding chair, a wrinkly softly played a harmonica. He looked up as the brothers tromped onto the porch, the rising sun behind the brothers masking their features in reddish shadows. The old man lowered his musical instrument.
Howdy! Welcome to the watering hole. Don't cost any jack to go in, but if you want me to watch your rats...
Without a word, Alan thrust his hand forward and buried a knife in the man's throat. Impatiently, Alan shoved the blade in deeper and twisted. The wrinkly went limp, and the harmonica dropped to the dusty wooden planks of the porch. Pulling the blade free, Alan wiped it clean on the still warm chest of the corpse, as Robert grabbed the harmonica and tucked it into a pocket. Hadn't seen one of these for some time. John worked the bolt on the combo rapid fire.
On my command, and not before.
Check.
Edward pushed open the heavy metal door with the barrel of his blaster. Bright light and smoke poured onto the porch, like peeking into an oven. Sauntering inside, John noticed the holstered blaster hidden under the vest of the dead man on the porch. So, not just a watchdog for the house, eh? He'd remember that. Even at this early hour of the morning, the watering hole was full of drinking men. An old fat man was sitting at a piano in the corner. The walls were covered with pre-dark foldouts of naked females and sparkled with dozens of the rainbow-colored discs some folks called CDs. Nobody knew what they were for, but the discs always made nice decorations, although the scantily dressed sluts leaning over the second-floor banister were a lot prettier. Some of the gaudy sluts were smoking hand-rolled cigs, their bare breasts swinging in tempo to the music. John felt his blood grow warm. After so much time in the wilds of the Deathlands, that was a wonderful sight. But not why they were here today. Business first, fun later. As they recalled from endless childhood days of scrubbing on their hands and knees, the floor of the gaudy house was also made of red brick, the material worn smooth into paths between the heavy tables. In the exact center of the tavern was its namesake, an artesian well. Even as a kid, John had been impressed by that. This was the only source of clean water for 100 miles, so the locals had built a tavern around it and opened for business. Trading water for food, Dempster had managed to stay alive during the years of chaos after Skydark, and then the horrible Muti Wars. The beer and gaudy sluts came later, but water was the local jack. Cool, clear spring water, without a trace of rads or toxins. Just a little of our piss, John thought. Watching the hated customers drink from the well after riding their mother upstairs, the brothers had savored that little revenge. Flavoring the well had been their first act of rebellion, but hardly their last. A dozen people were sitting on wooden barrels along the bar, drinking from cracked plastic cups. On the balcony directly above, a gaudy slut smoking a cheroot was looking down at the boisterous crowd. The busty woman was wearing only a loose pink gown that hung down at her sides, showing all of her worn charms. Along the left wall, a flight of wooden stairs led to the second-floor balcony. Situated at the bottom of the stairs was a young girl, sitting behind a heavy wooden table. On top of the table was a ceramic bowl full of wooden markers bearing room numbers and an alcohol lantern still burning brightly in spite of the daylight shining through the dusty windows. A gaudy slut looked bored, and the lantern was almost out of shine. The long night of work was nearly finished, and a new day was about to begin. Alan nudged John at the sight of the girl, and the elder Rogan grunted in reply. But Robert and Edward were scowling at the large man sitting in the far corner. From the sheer size of the man, his heavily scarred hands and broken nose, he had to be the bouncer. When customers got rowdy, the bouncer would slam them back down on their chair or heave them out the door. No sense wasting brass on a drunk, when a good thumping was all that was really needed. The corner position gave the bouncer a full view of the entire first floor, and kept anybody from sneaking behind him to try to get upstairs for free. The bouncer was big, old, and wide, with fingers as thick as sausages. A formidable enough guard, even without the pre-dark shotgun cradled in his massive hands. Robert noticed that immediately. A pump action. If it still worked, that would be real trouble. Drunken men were moving throughout the gaudy house. A skinny woman with buck teeth was sitting behind a Dutch door, haggling with each customer over what they wanted and how to pay.